Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Talk That Talk with Tweety and Erica. After a few technical difficulties, we are up and running, and hopefully I can complete this entire episode without my son saying otherwise, because he is whining up a storm right now. Tweety, what's going on?
Not much, man. Miss Chandler had a good little weekend with my little league basketball team. Coach Keith Chris coming 6-0. We won 38-8. It was pretty good. Actually, the whole organization looked pretty good this weekend in basketball. Nobody took them out, so it was pretty cool. Pretty good weekend. A special shout out to one of our family members who passed away 8 years ago. Today is the birthday of Brandon Radcliffe. I'm sending a special shout out. Happy birthday to Brandon Radcliffe, man. Rest in peace. So what's going on
with that? Not a whole lot, but it's definitely some. Not a whole lot going on in the sports spectrum over the last 5 or 7 days. Great weekend for college basketball, though. I mean, they had it lined up this past weekend. And it was probably not the game with the two highest ranking opponents, but definitely the probably most notable game in college basketball as far as player wise that happened yesterday was the OU LSU game. Where of course OU coming in ranked number one, and I'm gonna pronounce this kid's name wrong. I'm gonna apologize ahead of time. Buddy Hill. I think he has 25 a game, but maybe it's 26. I could be wrong. And then the highly touted freshman out of LSU, Ben Simmons. And if you didn't see the game yesterday, OU ended up winning. Great performance by Buddy Hill. He scored 11 in the first half. And LSU had a pretty good sized lead for a good portion of the game. Buddy scored 11 in the first half. And then there was a stretch in the second half where I wouldn't say he went crazy, but he definitely started knocking down some shots, especially some threes. And OU ended up winning. I think the point guard's name is Isaiah Cousins. He hit a jump shot. I'm going to say we're a few seconds left in the game, and OU ended up winning, pulling out the victory by 2. I think Buddy Hale ended up finished out with 32 points. He hit 6 or 7 threes, and Ben Simmons, he didn't play bad, he didn't have outstanding numbers. He was 6 or 7, 14 points. I don't recall off the top of my head how many rebounds and assists he had, but probably a pedestrian game. Did you have a chance to hit the game at all?
I saw a little bit of it. Like I said, for the most part, I was doing coaching on my own. But, yeah, I saw the second half, and Buddy Hill did. I would describe it as far as college goes anyway, as going crazy. I mean, because he is 7 three-pointers in the second half. They say he had 11 at halftime and ended with 32. Without his big second half input, LSU probably gets the upset by a pretty good margin because they was down more than once in this game by double digits. So, yeah, I'd say Buddy Hill, he pretty much grab the player of the year if don't nobody upstage that performance. That was a big time performance on a big time stage. And not to say LSU is just this great college basketball team, but if you get put out there in the public on prime time as far as the weekend goes, then yeah, a lot of eyes on you. And he performed. He showed out. Did what he was supposed to do. Like you said, Ben Simmons didn't have a fantastic game, but he did what Ben Simmons does. He filled the stat sheet up. like you said, I think he had like 15 points, maybe like 7 or 8 rebounds and 5 assists. And that's just the type of game that he is, and I mean the type of game that he has, and that's why a lot of people think he's going to be a good NBA. Why do you think he's a good NBA prospect? Because he plays the game totally. He supposedly has a high basketball IQ, and a little bit of that showed last night.
I think the biggest difference you could tell right away between Buddy Hield and Ben Simmons is you can tell that one's a senior and one's a freshman. Because
right.
as the game started to go on, you kind of get that. This is my perspective. I felt like I could sense just watching how Buddy Hield was shooting and kind of asking for the ball, that he could feel that sense of urgency and that he doesn't, there is no conflict. There's no conflict in his conscience about taking a bunch of shots, you know, to help his team win and, you know, maybe getting outside the offense a little bit. And I've seen Ben Simmons play a couple of times this year. And I think sometimes, at least in particular in this game, such a big game, you know, he only took 7 shots. Now, he did play really efficiently. And I guess there's an argument that could be made that even with him only taking 7 shots, LSU was up for probably 75, 80, maybe even 90% of the game, a good portion of it. LSU was winning. But I think the biggest difference, the thing that I imagine people criticize Ben Simmons on for about the game is that as the game got closer and closer down the stretch, he didn't really look to take it over or anything like that. And you could kind of feel that Buddy Hield, being the senior, kind of sensed that, and he tried to take it over a little bit, whereas Ben Simmons didn't really try to do that at all. He kind of just stayed within the team offense and there's nothing wrong with that, but I think a lot of times that when you have a superstar basketball player in those big moments, people tend to expect or at least like to see those big-time players try to take the game over, and he didn't do that last night. I heard an interesting argument yesterday on the College Game Day show on ESPN. They were debating who's the player of the year right now. I know you said that you think Buddy Hield is going to be the player of the year. But I think there's, you know, as they kind of pointed out yesterday, there's kind of two distinctions that Buddy Hield probably wins the player of the year, or maybe the best player in college basketball. But Ben Simmons is probably the better prospect because he's 6'10". You know, he's already well built. The one thing I have not seen him do really at all this year is I have not seen him shoot. I don't know if he's a good shooter. I heard that he could not shoot, but I don't know that because I haven't seen him shoot much. But he can run the break. He can run the break as a big man and be on the finishing end of passes. And he can also take the outlet pass and bring the ball up the court and score just as effectively or pass the ball just as effectively as probably any point guard in college basketball or any high assist player in basketball. And obviously, he's crushing the rebound. But if you watch him, you can just tell he's still got some growing to do because, you know, he's been compared to LeBron. Really, LeBron's probably the one he's really been compared to the most, that I've heard the most, which is, that's high expectations for a guy considering the career that LeBron has had, regardless of whether you like LeBron or not. But anyways, great weekend in college basketball. Kansas, Kentucky winning overtime. Saw a good portion of that game. That was a pretty good game. The Iowa State Texas A&M game was a pretty good game. Texas A&M pulled away late. Then the NBA had what should have been, going into the weekend, I thought was going to be the best game over the weekend. The Cavs played the Spurs. They turned out to be very competitive at all. Cavs kind of blew them out. Did you happen to watch any of that game?
Nah, I didn't get to catch that game, but I knew the Cavs were going big. Actually, that surprised me a little bit. Considering the fact that the last big stage that the Cavs were on, they got pretty much blasted. They got pasted by the Golden State Warriors, and I didn't, you know, I figured maybe, like I said, maybe this could be the post-head coach firing boot. You know, everybody feel like their job is on the line now, so they playing a little better. But, like I said, it surprised me that they just ran something out the gym, though.
I would have to disagree with you on the post-coach change and boost, because it wasn't like they – I think they were like 8-2 or 7. They had like some – they had a ridiculously good record in their last 10
right.
or 15 games before they fired David Blatt. So I don't think it's a post coaching change boost. Boost, even though I would agree with you if you were saying that that's been the way – that has definitely been the way that it has been portrayed in the media, is that now all of a sudden the Cavs are they switch coaches, they're playing faster, and they're playing so much better. It's like the Cavs are already winning, you know, before they got rid of David Blatt. So I would disagree with that notion. I just think it's part of the rhetoric that normally happens when you get a coaching change. Teams tend to play a little bit better for at least the first few games. And
right.
so, you know, they a lot of times in the media, they attribute that to a coaching change. And I think that's what they're trying to do here. And by doing it, to me, they're discrediting what David Blatt had done prior to him being fired. Because, like I said, the Cavs had been winning even prior to that. I mean, they had only lost,
right.
I think, 12 games, 11 games. Like I said, I believe in their last 10 games prior to David Blatt getting fired, they were like 8-2. Or something like that. I know one of those losses was against the Spurs, and the other loss was against the Warriors, obviously, that most of us saw. Anyways, moving on to the NFL before we get to the Super Bowl, it's probably the funnest thing to talk about, maybe. Johnny Manziel back in the news. I really don't even want to talk about it. I kind of wish I hadn't even brought it up. He's back in the news. If you didn't hear about what happened, his ex-girlfriend, current girlfriend, whatever she is, called the cops. Cops came to the house or apartment. I believe it was an apartment. Said something about she said that she had been assaulted or something happened, and the cops, Johnny Manziel wasn't arrested. They couldn't find him. They used helicopters, I believe, is what's being recorded, to try to find him, and somehow they were able to confirm later on that he was okay, because the girlfriend had said something along the lines of she was concerned about his safety or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my question to you is, do you think Johnny Manziel is done in the NFL after this?
Nope. And all this is what I'm saying now, because unless something is found that he did, like unless he actually does go to jail, like get arrested or something, I'm gonna say no. Like it's just that I never thought that whoever was gonna pick him up or Cleveland was gonna keep him, whatever. I didn't think he was gonna be a starter anyway this year. But if he thought so, he might have to go ahead and rethink that, because I think whoever does decide to take a chance on him, I don't care what the situation is they have at quarterback, they want to pick him up to make him a starter. And that's one thing. Now, if he does get in trouble behind this incident, then, yeah, it's a good possibility that Johnny Manziel is done in the NFL, but I don't think so. I have a hard time believing that he is done, because there's a few teams, Cowboys included, with interest in Johnny Manziel. So, yeah, I don't think he's done.
I don't think The interesting piece about this to me, and it's always funny that like what's in the public eye at that time will be the stuff that will get the most coverage and people will react the craziest about. If you think back, just what, a year and a half, 2 years ago, however long ago the Ray White situation was, with the domestic violence, you know, what happened between him and his current spouse, who's then his fiance. If this had happened during that time, there would be, like, in my opinion, there'd be way more outrage, because the female in this case is alleging some sort of physical assault. They did not say exactly what, but they alleged some physical assault. Now, you rewind back to during the season, you go back to during the season, this is the same girlfriend or whatnot that he had issues with in the car alongside the road, who had said that, you know, that he had grabbed her. And I don't want to make anything else up, so I'm not going to say what I think, what else I think she said, because that's unfair when it comes to stuff like that. But she did claim that there was some type of physical contact made between her and Johnny Manziel. He was not arrested during that incident, and he, as of right now, he has not been arrested for anything related to what happened in Fort Worth. But I find it interesting that there's not more outrage, because this is not the first time. This is the second time that this same female is accusing him of some sort of physical, some sort of assault. And I think it's interesting. Now, you know, I think any other guy, this is not Johnny Manziel, this guy's probably out of the league by now. Probably cut, because the thing that it comes back to is, I shouldn't say any other guy. No matter what people say, when you have talent, when you have ability, what people are willing to accept from you behavior-wise, that windows up a lot more. And I've always felt like that. If you have the talent, people will allow you to get away with more. They will stretch the rules a little bit more. You're more likely to get a second chance than somebody who's not very good. Because then it becomes like, you know, the risk versus the reward. You know what I mean? Right. And right now, I don't know that Johnny Manziel has shown that he's worth the headaches that he seems to be causing, and the negative press that has been associated with him. Basically, almost since, you know, he's come into the NFL, has been one thing or another since he's been in the NFL. Moving on past Johnny Football, as I still refer to him as, let's get into the big daddy of them all, as they like to call it. I guess that's the robot. That's the granddaddy. Anyway, Super Bowl 50 coming up next Sunday, I think it's February 7th. Don't even know what time the game comes on. All right, Super Bowl, tell me, please, what's the perfect menu for Super Bowl food?
Yeah, I mean, what else besides maybe wings, the little nachos, rotel dip, and if you're really trying to get full, get on the grill, get you some ribs or something. But I'd say the best food for a Super Bowl party or a watch party, keep it simple. Get you some wings, get some chips, get some dip, maybe some beer, two or three different kinds of beer, and you'd be all right.
I think I'm going to have to agree with you with I don't think you can go wrong with wings and with wings and some type of fries or whatnot, or whatever sides you choose. I think fries go perfectly with wings, but I think those are the two best. Some type of wings, some type of barbecue. But if you barbecue, it has to be the right kind of barbecue. Like, to me, barbecue chicken don't really go with the Super Bowl. I mean, I guess you could do it, but you know. But I think of Super Bowl food, I think of more like finger food when it comes to Super Bowl. Now, Super Bowl, okay, so you got your food. You got your menu. Or maybe you just know what you want to eat for Super Bowl Sunday. What is the best venue to watch it? And by venue, I mean, is it going to your friend's house or a family member's house or a Super Bowl watch party where they got men, women, kids there? Is it going to a bar and watching it? Is it, you know, going to, oh, you know, the Carolina Panthers, if you're a Carolina Panthers fan, all the Carolina Panthers fans are getting together at this bar. What's the best venue to you, in your opinion, to watch the Super Bowl?
Me personally, I would rather watch at the house or at a friend's house, like at a Super Bowl party or something, just because it's, I don't know, you get to chill and watch it with more than likely a lot of people that you know, a lot of people who actually going to have at least somewhat of an interest in the game, and Well, at least the people like that you kick it with 9 times out of 10 are gonna be like-minded of you. So I would rather watch it maybe at a Super Bowl party at home. But it's if you one of those I gotta experience the atmosphere type of fan, then yeah, I said a bar is perfect because you can get the loud crowd, you can get rowdy like you would at the game. But as a personal preference, I'd rather go to a Super Bowl party.
I think the perfect place to watch the Super Bowl, to me, sort of depends on where you're at in life, meaning what you have going on in your personal life. Because I would say before I was married, when I was single, a Super Bowl party, or maybe even, I wouldn't call it a bar. But if you want to call Hooters or Buffalo Wild Wings, something like that, a bar, maybe somewhere like that maybe be the best place. And you don't have to worry about cooking. You don't have to worry about cleaning up. You can just eat and chill and watch the game. You don't have to really do anything else but enjoy yourself. Now, somebody like me, I'm married, got 3 kids, especially having 3 boys. I personally, I'm kind of like you. I don't want to go to a Super Bowl party. I will watch the game at home, like in my own house. I mean, I may go out and buy some wings or I'll probably end up barbecuing or something like that. But for me, I want to just stay in my own crib and watch the game with my kids and my wife. I don't watch the game, but, watch the game at home. Like you said, I chill, put my feet up in my recliner and just enjoy the game as opposed to hearing a lot of, because when you have kids, you always used to hearing a bunch of noise. So, I know for me, I don't always get excited about going to places that where it's gonna be like a whole lot of noise, and I don't get a chance to just sit down and just watch the game and enjoy it. You know what I mean? So that matters to me. That's kind of why I would prefer to watch it at home. And I think where you're at in life matters a whole lot. Oh man, yep. I forgot my next question about the Super Bowl. I just had a blank about it. All right, real quick, before we pick the game, just as an objective observer, what do you think each team has to do in order for them to come out on top for the Super Bowl?
As far as Denver, they have to find a way to. I want to say keep Cam Newton in the pocket. Like, don't over pursue him on your rush. Don't get too wide. Don't get too outside of your lanes. Cam will pick you apart. Even when he steps up to throw the ball, it's like once he takes a step forward, your defense has to react as if he's gonna run the ball. And once that happens, he's throwing it right over your head to Ted Ginn or to Jericho Cottry or anybody else that's considered to be a mediocre receiver in the NFL. I'm saying for Carolina, basically just do what you do. I mean, I know you're going up against the number one defense in the league, but you have to continue to run the ball. Like, if Carolina becomes one-dimensional, Denver defense is the one defense I think that can capitalize off of it and make Carolina Panthers pay. But they have to remain balanced. Carolina has to be able to run the ball. If they're not able to run the ball, it might be a longer day than expected for Carolina fans.
All right. Run the ball. I think we agree for the most part. I would say for Denver to win, I think they have to stay. I mean, and this kind of goes to both teams, really. I think they have to stay ahead of the chains. They have to try to get Peyton Manning, third and six or shorter, because I think that trying to win a game against a team that defensively gets after the quarterback and plays so well with their front seven, and they got some pretty, they banged up a little bit in the secondary, but they still got a top tier corner in Josh Norman. I think that with Peyton Manning not having the arm strength, I think what you want to do is keep him in those if you, you know, keep them in those third and manageables where you don't have to continuously ask him to throw the 20-yard out cut or the, you know, the 15-yard route, or the 15-yard crossing route or whatever it is across the middle where he's got to, where his pass has got to be perfect every time he throws it, or, you know, you risk interception, because I don't think that is playing to his strengths as he's gotten to this point in his career. So I think that's going to be really, really important for Denver. So obviously that goes without saying that Denver's got to run the ball well. I mean, and that may be the key to victory on both sides of the ball, is who runs the ball, who runs the ball the best. And obviously Denver can't turn the ball over, because if you turn the ball over and you let Carolina get up early and they get out, you know, jump on teams like they jumped on Arizona and like they jumped on the Seahawks early, then you got to put more pressure on Peyton Manning to try win the game on his arm, and I don't think he's capable of doing that anymore at this stage in his career.
Right.
Defensively, I think, you know, the Broncos have got to shut down the run and challenge those guys at the line of scrimmage. You know, they got to try to figure out a way to slow down or stop Greg Olsen. And, you know, not give up the big play. If you look at Carolina's last two games, AFC championship game and a divisional round, a lot of big plays offensively. So I think that's the other thing you got to do is limit the amount of big plays. Now, flipping over to Carolina, they got to run the ball well. You know, they got to run the ball well. I think they got to keep from, you know, not turn the ball over. This is speaking to Carolina offense. Don't turn the ball over. Run the ball well. And capitalize on your opportunities. I'm sure, you know, Ted Ginn, they got some speedy receivers. Greg Olsen is a really good tight end. When they have an opportunity to make big plays, they have to capitalize. And Cam's got to make those good throws. Defensively, I don't think the biggest thing is they got to stop the run. Same thing with Denver. They got to stop the run and stop the run and force Peyton Manning to be perfect. Meaning, your receivers are going to get open. It happens.
Right.
But you want to, first of all, put pressure on Peyton Manning and make him get him off his spot and make those passing windows as small as you possibly can, because, again, like I said, Peyton Manning just doesn't have the arm strength. He's never really had, like, an off-the-charts arm strength, but it's even worse now. But, you know, he just doesn't have that arm strength. And I think the tighter those windows are, the more opportunities that Carolina will have to create turnovers in the passing game. And if they stop the running game, you want to try to keep the Broncos in third and long situations. You know, that plays out of the hands of Peyton Manning. And if they can get up early, I think it's going to be hard for Denver to come back. That being said, we got a little bit less than a minute and a half left. Who you got to win, and who you picking for Super Bowl MVP?
I got Carolina winning, and in a shocker, because I know I'm going to say Luke Kuechly is going to be the MVP. I think Carolina's defense is going to come out here and really put the chokehold on Denver's offense, which is not really too hard. I ain't going to say not too hard to do, because you do have Peyton Manning and he got a lot of weapons, but that's just my choice. I think Carolina wins and Luke Kuechly is going to be the MVP.
I'm taking Carolina as well. I was thinking maybe Luke Kuechly, but you know what? I'm gonna say the hopes lie on Cam. Cam got to be Cam. I want to see Cam out there dabbing on them folks. If Cam do enough, Cam out there dabbing, and you can be sure that the Broncos are probably going to lose if Cam's out there dabbing. But we got 10 seconds left. Thank God for tuning in. Go to blogtalk.com/talkthattalk. With Tweety and LJ, and download the podcast and listen. Tell a friend to tell a friend to listen. We see y'all next week.
All right, I'll let y'all, please, man, talk that talk. Well, be right. End the episode.